Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. It is Dukes and Bell. Hope you're having a great Monday. We certainly are. We witnessed yesterday and over the weekend with the wild card weekend. And then more on the national championship game as well. Now that it's set, we're going to talk to our buddy Connor Riley coming up. Guy Talk on the way here a little bit later on this hour as well. And we will dive back in, if you're just tuning in, to our discussion about where the Falcons need to go with their search for D.C. If you missed it, they did fire Jimmy Lake over the weekend, as Mike said. As the news dropped while all this other stuff was going on. Meanwhile, our general manager spoke on Thursday, and we said this. This was probably the way it was going to play out, and it did. And so we're in the business now of looking for not only a new DC, Mike, but a new defensive line coach as well.
Yeah, now, again, a couple guys hit us up. Some folks are reviving what you and I were talking about earlier in the show about, like, yeah, not trying to make it a federal case. It would be kind of, you know, you could argue timeline-wise more interesting if you actually do make the move with Jimmy Lake and then the general manager can answer questions about it after that happens. They decide to do it the other way. But bottom line is you got to get somebody, as you pointed out, because Rabel's putting his staff together and more coaches are going to get hired and all of a sudden the good guy is going to get gobbled up.
More on that on the way. Let's talk some dogs. All right, Connor Riley, it is good to have you on. The news broke last week before all this stuff happened with the storm, and Mike and I were like, whoa, what do you mean he's going in the portal? My question to you is, did they tell him he was not welcome back? And, of course, I'm talking about Carson Beck. How do you view what went down with him last week?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, how much of an option was Georgia for Carson? I'll just say, as someone who's been around the team, as someone who's covered the team, obviously he wants to come back, wants to pursue another year of college football. I think both sides were ready to move on. It sounds sort of like an amicable breakup, so to speak, from my understanding of it. The way that this team sort of responded to Gunnar, not just in the lead up to that Notre Dame game, but I think that Texas game in the second half was kind of telling to me. And it was just, it was a really difficult year with Carson. Not all of it his fault. Obviously, wide receiver was an issue. The team couldn't run the ball all that well. But I just think that this is a scenario where I think Georgia and Carson were both ready to move on to sort of see what else is out there. And so I think because of the injury that Carson has and how that impacts his draft stock, he's going to try and elevate it once again at Miami, just like Cam Wood did a season ago. And that really worked out for him, as he's now poised to be a top five pick. But when it comes to Carson and Georgia, I think both sides were ready to move on and see what life is like after this partnership.
You think there was ever a moment where Kirby would have considered bringing him back, or was kind of like, you go to Miami, because then you got a guy that's not going to be able to do spring football, and then you know, kind of wasting, you know, reps for Gunnar Stockton and Pulisic and everybody else that comes in the transfer portal part two? Or was that never a consideration? Beck was pretty much out the door.
I think once Carson had the injury happen to him and the way that that had sort of been handled in the run-up to the Sugar Bowl and how he was away from the team and away from the program, showed up late to the team in New Orleans, I think the writing was kind of at the wall. Writing was on the wall at that point. I don't think Kirby loved the way that Carson Beck went out there and handled that time where he was weighing when to have surgery and how it was going to look with him. So I think from that point on, in the sort of three-week span between when the injury happens and when he elects to get surgery, sort of seals his fate that he would not be coming back to Georgia.
So let's talk about what Mike Bobo had to say about Gunnar Stockton, because he is basically saying what? They've got to do a better job in supporting him moving forward?
Yeah, and this, you know, I think reflects some of the issues that Georgia on the whole had this past season. It was the worst rushing offense that Kirby Smart had in his time here at Georgia. They gave up 25 sacks. That's the most sacks that they've given up under Kirby Smart in a single season. They led the country in drops. I know Carson wasn't always perfect this year, especially with turnovers, but the supporting cast around the quarterback was not good enough to win a national title either. And so I think going into 2025, they know that the skill players around Gunner or whoever the Georgia quarterback is just flatly has to be better. You look at the NFL playoffs this weekend. Ladd McConkey, James Cook, and George Pickens all scored touchdowns. Those guys all played key roles in the 2021 and 2022 national championship team. I didn't see a lot of guys that are going to be scoring touchdowns in the NFL playoffs on Georgia's offense this season. So they've got to find a way to improve the skill talent around the quarterback, regardless of how well the quarterback plays or how well Mike Bobo calls plays himself.
Are you going to be able to get we talked about safeties. I saw the article you read or you wrote last week about some safeties leaving. You do have a defense that, you know, you're going to put more guys in the league, Mykel Williams and Jalen Walker. So how good is the defense going to be and how much of that is going to be dependent on the portal?
Yeah, I think with this Georgia defense, you know, it may not have the individual talent that this past team has, but you bring back Daylon Everett, you bring back Christian Miller, and I just think with the way that they've recruited on this team, they're always going to have, at bare minimum, a good defense, even I think this portal age where you see guys move on and they're just not as deep as they were in years past. I know there's some concern about the outside linebacker position with Damon Wilson moving on and entering the transfer portal. But for me, as long as Georgia, I think, always has a strong spine of the defense, defensive tackles, inside linebackers, and safeties, I think the defense is still going to be really good. And you look into next season, K.J. Bolden coming back at safety, you bring back a loaded inside linebacker room. While you lose some pieces on the defensive line, you still have some quality depth there that is better than, quite frankly, 99% of college football programs. So the defense under Georgia and Kirby Smart, it's always going to be good. I think the big question is it a difference-making defense? At times it was this season. At times, like we saw against Ole Miss in the first half against Alabama, it wasn't. And so I'm interested in seeing, again, with a difficult schedule for Georgia next year, what all that sort of looks like.
Connor, what about the offensive line and the recruiting of the offensive linemen that they've gone out and gotten? I know we've gotten a lot of press or they've touted how big this line coming in is going to be and all of that. How talented do you think it's going to be, and is that going to be a difference maker on the offensive side of the ball?
It's the single biggest question going into 2025, Carl, for this Georgia team. How does this offensive line get better? Because they're losing four guys to the NFL draft, and, you know, Tate Ratledge was an All-American and a multi-year starter. Dylan Fairchild was an All-American. Jared Wilson's probably going to be the first center taken in the NFL draft, and despite all that individual talent, it never gelled this season, and it never played up to its potential. And they've got some highly recruited guys coming back. You know, Monroe Freeling was a five-star prospect. Ernest Green was a top 50 tackle. I know they really like Daniel Calhoun as a freshman guard that is expected to play a lot. The one thing that at least intrigues me, and maybe this is looking at a glass half full side, Drew Bobo is a more natural center than Jared Wilson, and I just think that that matters at that position. And so while Drew Bobo, he's not the athlete that Jared Wilson is, I think the line might function a little bit better just because he sees the game the way a center needs to see it. And I don't think Jared Wilson, because he wasn't a natural center, necessarily always saw it that way this season.
Are they going to get more quarterbacks? You know, one of the things we talked about with Jaden Rashada moving on, and you've already focused on Carson Beck, because, you know, and by the way, Gunnar Stockton, it's not a competition, right? Most Georgia fans just assume he's going to be the guy through spring football, and it's his team.
Yeah, I think the quarterback April transfer window is going to be really interesting. You know, Gunnar, they're not going to come out and name him the starter. That's just not how Kirby operates in the spring more often than not. But he's going to be Georgia's starting quarterback when they open the season against Marshall. But to your point, Mike, about quarterback depth, Gunner takes a lot of hits, and they are violent hits. And I know he got up in the Texas game, and he got up in the Notre Dame game, but he can't play that way over the course of a 12-game SEC season and expect to make it through. So you're going to need guys with experience. You're going to need guys that you trust behind him. And I do expect when that April transfer window rolls around, much like they did a season ago when they went in and grabbed Jaden Rashada just in case, they're going to look for a guy that's had some real playing experience, maybe not be better than Gunnar Stockton, but can be a guy that at least offers some insurance behind him. Because right now, well, Ryan Puglisi is the backup, and I know they like him a lot and they think a lot of him. None of the quarterbacks on Georgia's roster next year other than Gunnar Stockton have played in a college football game. And that can certainly be a little bit frightening when you look at the schedule that Georgia has to play.
What do you think about the national championship game, Connor, as we get a preview of this game coming up on January 20th here in Atlanta?
I want this to be a good game. I think really highly of this Notre Dame team. I think they're exceptionally well coached. They execute really well. They are sort of run like an NFL team in that sense. But I just think Ohio State has too much talent. And I think Notre Dame's going to be able to muck the game up a little bit. But I wouldn't be surprised if the final score is something similar to what you saw with Ohio State, Texas, where it's 28-14. And while that Texas-Ohio State game was very close throughout, I don't necessarily know that this Notre Dame-Ohio State game is going to be, just because I don't know that Ohio State, or that Notre Dame rather, has the horses on the offensive side of the ball. But I'm excited to see it. I know there are people out there that are say this is a statement about, you know, the SEC not being in there and what that says about this. This Notre Dame team is really, really good, and it's an Ohio State team that has been the most talented team from the jump. They haven't always played like it, but more often than not, talent tends to rise to the top, and I think that's what's going to happen next Monday in Atlanta.
I know at the end of the day, we know the landscape has changed and the depth just isn't there. You already covered, you know, the trenches that were always kind of the calling card for Kirby's teams. Is this the way it's just going to be moving forward? I mean, where you're going to have some outliers and teams that may be non-traditional, or is Kirby going to reestablish himself? Because the Notre Dame game, it still seems like, man, Notre Dame might get trucked the way TCU got trucked by Georgia. And would Georgia get trucked if they played Ohio State right now?
And that's a fair question. And, you know, again, this Georgia team, I don't think enough got made of it when it was said during the season, because it came after that win over Tennessee, and we were talking about the mental toughness that this team has. Kirby came out and flatly said this team was not his most talented team. And you know, he's got to find a way to get more talent. That's one of the things he does better than anyone. And in this new day and age, it's undoubtedly harder to do that, and especially as we move to a revenue-sharing model. It's going to look more like an NFL-style playoff year in, year out. And I think that Notre Dame-Georgia game is a perfect example of that, where, you know, yes, Notre Dame won, and they absolutely deserve to win. I'm taking away nothing from them. Georgia outgained them that day, but Notre Dame made four or five more plays than Georgia did, and they were able to win that game, and they're now playing in the national championship. Notre Dame absolutely deserved to win that game, but if Georgia, you know, doesn't give off a kickoff return for a touchdown and doesn't fumble in the red zone, right, maybe they're getting ready to play Ohio State. And I just think that that's how college football is going to be more now in a year-in, year-out basis, where you're going to have 6-7 teams that the margins are really close, and you're going to have to find a way to execute. And this Georgia team this year was not able to execute in those moments, and Notre Dame was, and that's why Notre Dame has a chance to win a national title.
Connor, with all the movement around the National Football League, are any Georgia coaches getting traction? Is this staff going to stay intact?
I think that as we see moving forward, this is going to be something, especially as we get into February and the recruiting period cools a little bit in that regard. That's something you're going to see. Last year, you know, no one thought Brian McClendon was going to end up leaving. He becomes the wide receivers coach for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So I would not be surprised in the slightest if Georgia has some coaching movement and some of the guys on this roster, or on this coaching staff rather, step away from the program or take a job in the NFL.
Got 20 seconds left, Connor. He'd never move on from Bobo or Stacey Searles?
I wouldn't say never with Kirby Smart. He moved on after James Collier's 1 year as the offensive coordinator. Bobo, I think, is back. Stacey Searles, I'm still watching intently to see what ends up happening there on the offensive line.
Fair. Good stuff. Thank you, Connor. Tell the people where they can follow your stuff.
Yeah, you guys can follow me on Twitter at @KConnorRiley. We still got a ton of off-season content here coming for you. You know, college football never really seems to stop.
But last night we got a chance to see Jaden Daniels, who was at the center of all things. He basically put the team on his back. You know, when you talk about throwing or running for 304 yards of Washington's 350 total, you saw last night once again, and I think for Falcon fans, we saw this a few weeks ago when we played him. He's got it. He led him down the field, overtime win against us. Now, I do think if we got the ball, I did have confidence in Michael Penix in doing the same thing. He didn't get that opportunity. But the thing about Jaden Daniels, and the reason why I feel like they've got their guy and I feel like we've gotten ours, Mike, is because of experience. Now, hear me out. Jaden Daniels played a lot of college football. He played 12 games at Arizona State in 19, 13 in 21. He got hurt in 2020. And that was the shortened COVID season, so he only played four games. And then he goes to LSU and he plays 14 games and 12 games. When you look at Michael Penix in his career at Washington, he played a lot of college football. 49 games, 45 starts. And here's the crazy thing about both of these guys. You know how old they are? 24. Anthony Richardson's the youngest quarterback in the National Football League right now at 22 years old. These guys played a lot of college football, Mike, and you're seeing it play out. You saw it with Bo Nix,
right,
who played a lot of college football. Comes to the NFL, we don't think his skill set is quite there. Sean Payton says, watch this. and they go to the playoffs. We got our guy because of these qualities and how they play into the development of a quarterback. I think there's nothing like playing the game. And so that's why, Mike, when I'm watching Jaden Daniels last night, I'm like, our guy played a lot, too. And we saw it in the three games that we watched.
Right. I mean, you wish, you know, you could have just given the full season. As we all know, in hindsight, you know, it's just it's one of those what-ifs if you just simply gone with one or the other. But you're right. And he's been there. And he has gone through the knee injuries, but he's bounced back. And he showed you the ability to run for the end zone, hit the pylon like he did in the game for us against Carolina. He looks great. I mean, he's a veteran. Bo Nix, same thing. The moment wasn't too big. He just, you know, you're going to, in your first playoff game, there's going to be some yips there in that. But you're right. Jaden Daniels, I saw. That's why I loved him so much over Caleb Williams. Remember you and I would break down the draft last year?
Yes.
I got to see him in New Orleans in the Superdome for the kickoff game that year, then in Orlando the year later against the Noles, and he's got it. The only knock, I guess, on Jaden Daniels pre-draft was is he too skinny? Is he going to take a hit?
Yeah.
But he's certainly found that way. He's taken some knocks.
He's slight, should I say.
But he's found the way to avoid that big hit that's going to take him out the way RG3 couldn't. So I'm with you. And look, we've got a great guy, and hopefully now it's all his from the jump. I don't know what this is going to look like, if Cousins is going to be here as a backup. If he is, it's a hell of a resource. I still don't think that's going to be happening, but either way, he's ready to run this team.
He played 17 games this year. So did Bo Nix. People forget C.J. Stroud, who's 23, about to be 24. Now has gone to the playoffs in back-to-back years. Did it his rookie season, and now they're back in the playoffs. And they got a chance to go upset Kansas City. Now, I do not think that's going to happen. Kansas City needed this time more probably than any other team to get healthy. And they've had basically 3 weeks since they clinched to sit guys and relax, and then they got the bye. But the point is, as you start looking at these quarterbacks around the league, it gives you a reason for hope. And that is what we're looking for right now, Mike, as we're going through all of this stuff with our team, and you're like, okay, we need a DC, we got to upgrade here and here and here. But when you say, hey, what's going to get us over the hump? That's what's going to get you over the hump.
Right. We got a guy. We got to do – now, that was the great debate. If you were going to go get Penix is – and let him sit. And I didn't like it, the idea of sitting behind Cousins. By the time you finally see him, he'll be 26. You know, let's get him in his prime. Let's get him out there. Let's roll. But you're right. You feel good about him. He's getting guys involved. I know I asked Carl earlier, can he help to keep Pitts engaged? I don't know. It might be too much to ask for a guy in his first full year as a starter. But him and Drake London have got chemistry. You know, Drake London was, you know, upset. He probably could have. Drake London could be on his way to a Mike Evans record with a couple of thousand-yard season. But he had Mariota. Then he had Ritter. And you look what happens, even with Cousins hitting, you know, the whatever button that was. You see it. Drake London, you're getting the most out of it. No one's complaining about us taking Drake London with that pick.
What do you guys think? 404-726-0929. We will talk about the names that are being thrown around and mentioned out there for defensive coordinator. And again, I said, don't believe everything you see. Some of this is just, you know, a mirage. Some of it is real. And I do think they already have an idea of where they want to go. But, Mike, the other part of this is somebody asked me, guys, you think they had already fired Jimmy Lake when Terry spoke on Thursday? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know.
Now we're getting into, like, be careful and we're getting in trouble here. But, you know, if that was the case, well, that's not right. If they had already made a determination, that's not cool. And if you go, well, why isn't it cool?
Maybe they knew but hadn't made it official.
I mean, but just make – so that way the media can ask the questions. Well, okay. So what are you looking for in a defensive coordinator? Do you feel the coach made a mistake in hiring a rookie guy who'd never done the job before? Questions you want answered. Do you feel that, you know, this is the question? Remember, I brought this up a couple years ago. Felt there was a disconnect between the players you draft and the players, you know, the coaches have to coach.
Yep.
Oh, man, did that get people fired up. I mean, because it's like the Pitts thing. You draft a guy that now, by the end of the season, he's not even a factor. He's a backup. You know, he did score a touchdown in that Commanders game. We've talked about Taylor, you know, Tyler Anderson. Can't get on the field. Can't stay on the field.
Troy Anderson.
When I said Taylor. I botched that name seven ways this Sunday. Troy Anderson. Carl, it's been so long since I've seen him, I forgot his first name.
And that's fair, because he hadn't played since when? The week he won player
but no,
of the
but
week.
But that's when your general manager is being too cute with his second-round picks. Look, if Rucarow becomes Aaron Donald, we can all kiss his butt in the county square. But the idea of taking a project guy when you need impact. You know, can we all agree, Carl, we were going to have a short window on the original business model of Kirk Cousins. We're going to have 2 years to try to make a run. So why are we monkeying around with guys that don't really have a specific skill set just yet, that aren't identified as being a designated pass rusher or a guy who's going to be disruptive? Now, we're hoping Rowe is going to be that guy, and maybe, you know, Dorless or Braylon Trice. Trice got hurt before the season started. We're just not getting the impact from the early picks as high as we go on defense. He committed to defensive line, ignored the secondary. Big-time corners were available. You've seen some of the guys that win the second round in the playoffs, by the way.
Yes. Are you willing to right now say, at 15 where we currently sit, and who knows if we keep the pick? I don't know. You know what? I'm worried about next week. I can hardly worry about March. or April. But it's got to be defense, right? It's got to be defense.
Oh, who the hell knows?
Come on.
Now,
come on.
Now, the only offensive thing I would do, and we spoke with Mark Romani from ESPN, I believe you're going to hear that conversation a little bit later in the show, is would you try to upgrade on McGarry? They seem to be satisfied with the offensive line's composition. So I know we've got good offensive line depth. I know Storm Norton we've talked about, New Zeal we're able to plug in. But the only thing I would think remotely offensive would maybe be a new tackle.
Mm.
But everything else, it's got like edge rush. Are you going to try to move up in the draft? You don't have all your picks as far as equity. Would you forfeit something from the future? Yeah, maybe that'd be the next general manager's problem if you don't get it right.
Yeah. Or you end up staying and then you short side yourself, by thinking about trying to fix everything in this year. They're not going to be able to fix everything. This is why I think coaching matters. You got to coach some of these guys up. Some of the stuff that Mike's talking about, just development. Rook is going to be fine. I'm not worried about Rook. Mm-hmm. I feel like some of the other guys that we have, and again, this gets back to the D-line coach, some of that guys is not getting the job done. I mean, we could talk about guys like into the quarterback, but part of that is what are you teaching? What are you coaching? What are we scheming up for? Mm. And if you don't have the right people in the building to do that, it doesn't matter what you think about your draft picks. They're never going to live up to the promise of what you drafted them for. So I'm just saying, as far as right now, I would tell you that if that pick is not defense, specifically up front, I'm hoping for a big interior tackle or an edge guy. Right. If it's not, I'm going to be ticked off. I mean, then you are blatantly, Mike, ignoring where your deficiencies are.
Well, guys,
corner, right? Or stud corner.
And that's it. And again, there was five corners that went in the second round, but you moved up to get a guy that was projected as a third rounder. And look, I like Rook and we like the energy, but, I've made the argument for me more impact. Guys already hit us up. We'll go get Abdul Carter. Well, you better move up to the first, second pick. That guy's going to be top five. I mean, guys,
not happening.
Same thing. Forget it. The other names like Michael Williams is a top 10 pick right now. Combine still has to go through guys' pro day. All the weird stuff that happens between now and then.
Medical.
Yeah, James Pierce is another guy, which is, he's the top. He's anywhere in the. Forget it. Wait till we get to the. We got plenty of time to break that down. But yes, I would like to see if there was a Georgia Bulldog available and his name was Jalen Walker or Michael Williams and he happened to be there at 15, that would be somebody I'd be interested in.
Okay. And I don't have a problem with that either. I don't. Want to know what you guys think? You can text us 404-726-0929. Follow Mike. He's Mike Bell, ATL. I may put him up. See Dukes. And the radio show is Dukes and Bell 929. I just want you to know that there are very. There are a lot of things, should I say, in common with Jaden Daniels and our quarterback. And the main thing is experience. Jaden Daniels is not afraid of this moment. And we heard Dan Quinn talk about it earlier when we were talking about them advancing and how cool he is. I get the same vibe from Michael Penix.
Right.
When we're in the Washington game, we needed to go down and score. When he dropped that dot in there he wasn't afraid of the moment.
Yeah, I feel like he made a mistake with the interception. That's the thing. You're taking his first three games that would have been back in September, now you're throwing him into a must-win game in D.C., and then your coach does
That was unfair.
And then your coach does you no favor. He throws a dime to Darnell Mooney. He just can't get out of bounds. All right, have the presence of mind to give him 30 seconds to get down the field. A guy who's shown you the ability in his big games in Washington, yes, they're going to take away the sideline. Okay, guess what? The guy's got a rifle. But we'll never freaking know, will we?
No, but that wasn't on the quarterback.
Nope.
This is where you look to the sideline for advice, for
and
help.
Players are like, go back and watch, guys. I've watched it. Chris has watched it, too. Look at the players. Like, we're calling a timeout, right? Oh, we're not. Okay. That's on Raheem. And all the convoluted logic about exotic defenses and all. He's a rookie. Okay. Either they're going to stop the outside. They're going to take away the sidelines, make you throw inside. We get it.
Yep.
Let's give him three cracks at it. That still drives me crazy because watching the Commanders and seeing that game last night, knowing we had them on the ropes at their house.
At their house, yeah. Daniels hits Terry McLaurin halfway through the fourth quarter, and then one possession later with the game tied. It was Kalijah Kancey for the critical first down that sets up the field goal. I just felt like those plays our guy can make, and that's all I'm telling you. He's going to get there hopefully right. Next year, Mike, but – I think we got one, and I'm watching Jaden Daniels going, why he's so comfortable. He's played a lot, man, and these moments are not too big for him.
And by the way, Kalijah Kancey was busting in like the Kool-Aid man from Tampa Bay at times. Trying to go up-tempo to take away Vita Vea. Maybe we ought to try that once in a while.
All right, man, what do we got coming up in Guy Talk?
Hey, man, it's official now. The Vegas newspaper's got it. Tom Brady. pushing people out of the Raiders organization. We'll get you some of that stuff. Chris already tackled the very 2002 media center for Wolf Blitzer. Also, how does a NFL wide receiver turn somebody into the number one selling book? Where to play is play. Hey, guys, hitting the road on Wednesday. Tomorrow will be at State Farm, by the way. So come by and see us behind the Ta in Atlanta as you walk in the main entrance. We'll be right there. But Wednesday, we're going to be at Buffalo's Cafe in
Hiram.
I can honestly say, in all my time in Atlanta, I don't believe I've ever set foot in Hiram. But we'll be there. Special time in a Boys Life car. We'll be there 2 to 7 on Wednesday. Come on down and say hi. Buffalo's Cafe will be there. So just up the road from, where is that up the road from? I guess Powder Springs.
Well, it's up by Ackworth.
I'm not trying to insult Hiramites. I'm just saying, never been over there. But we're up that neck of the woods, man.
Yeah, it's up there.
Big antenna. So come by and see us on Wednesday. It'll be a lot of fun. Hey, we were talking earlier about all the NFL storylines. Mike Tomlin, you know, longest tenured coach in the NFL, but a lot of folks feeling maybe it's time you need to change things up, turn the page. You know, I mean, it's still a results-driven business, Carl, and you got a 5-game losing streak to end the year, and unfortunately, you're not getting out of the first round of the playoffs. Steelers were asked questions, and we start with, again, George Pickens, kind of giving you the vibe in that room when he was, well, take a listen, asked about, you know, the future of the offense and feeling maybe there's some good things happening here.
Yeah, I've seen signs of growth for sure. From past, you know, the first year I've been here, just way more growth for sure.
George, does that make you optimistic going forward?
Nah.
Really?
So he wasn't the only one. Also asked about what's going on in Pittsburgh, including Najee Harris. Post-game media availability was the last question for him was, asked if he wants to stay with the Steelers. Asked if he put any time into thinking about it. He says he hasn't put much time into thinking about it at all. Now it comes out after Najee Harris spoke with Taylor Rooks that apparently a lot of things were kind of just funky the last few weeks as things are kind of going south in the Steel City. Najee Harris telling Taylor after the game, guys have been saying things in the locker room that he necessarily didn't want to say on camera. But he felt that during the losing streak, he felt that the media, what they were saying about the Steelers was infiltrating the locker room.
Wow.
And players were kind of echoing some of those sentiments. So sometimes the tail does wag the dog. And as you like to say, those guys do hear everything.
They do. The good news, or at least the good thing that Mike Tomlin has done in years past, has been able to keep that noise outside and not have it distract his team. If that in fact happened, Mike, then they have some things, some cracks, right, that they need to fix. And if it starts with, you think if it starts with Mike Tomlin, I just simply say this. Jets haven't been in the playoffs in 13 years. Okay. Would you like Mike Tomlin? We haven't been in 7. Would you like Mike Tomlin? The idea that you're sick of getting there and you're losing is, it's something I can't even fathom because we hardly ever get there. There are organizations and teams that hardly ever get there. Right. I do think, Mike, there is a time and place. There's a time to come, and there's a time to go. Maybe it is time for them to part ways and they need a fresh start with a new vision and new coach.
Right.
And if that's the case, the Steelers aren't firing him.
No.
They are going to let him go the way that he wants to walk out of the door because, guys, he's going to the Hall of Fame as a Pittsburgh Steelers coach.
But he's in a no-man's land. They don't have a quarterback. I mean, the guys, I know we still have a lot of Fields fans in this neck of the woods, understandably, but Fields was benched for Russell Wilson. Then Russell Wilson, it's kind of dried up and kind of didn't really happen. I was just joking around with Carl. You know, despite having those two quarterbacks figure it out, I said to Carl, maybe Arthur Smith's not such a hot commodity when he doesn't have Derrick Henry toting the rock like he did in Tennessee.
So in 2019, Derrick Henry ran for 1,500 yards. He toted the ball 303 times. By the way, he's got a lot of mileage on those legs. The next year, Arthur Smith gave it to him 378 times, and that's the year he ran for over 2,000 yards. This year, he ran 325 times for 1,921. Mike, every year he's had the ball over 300 times, he's ran for over 1,500 yards. But you're right. In those 2 years, in 18 and 19, is when the Titans were on the cusp of going to the Super Bowl.
Look, I don't know if maybe that was an untenable situation because the wide receiver play was so inconsistent at times. And either way, Arthur Smith, they were so excited to get rid of Matt Canada. And then, if we're honest, the Steelers' offense was a lot of meh at times this year with a save for maybe 2 or 3 games. Hey, meanwhile, last night over in Philly, A.J. Brown giving a bump to an author who's wrote a book, which apparently everybody has jumped on. It's shot up to the top of Amazon's number one bestseller list, Inner Excellence, Carl.
Self-help.
Train your mind for extraordinary performance and the best possible life. from Jim Murphy. Now, me personally, I have no use for these books, but a lot of people do love them and do use them and apply these things. A.J. Brown was seen reading this on the sideline. Tom Brady was joking around about it. My teammates call it the recipe, he told reporters, asked about the book. It's got a lot of points in there. It's a lot of mental game, a lot of mental parts about it. And for me, this game is mental. So now a lot of folks are reading the book. They reached out to the author, according to the New York Post. And he says, actually Sports Illustrated did. It's been a pretty amazing night, man. I'm sitting here in a hotel by myself. I'm like, what's with all these messages on my phone? The author, Jim Murphy, says. And then I saw what happened. I'm like, oh, my God, it's crazy. Really neat. So apparently, obviously, a lot of folks are going to be reading this book and try to get some out of it. It didn't, unfortunately, help him get more than one catch for 10 yards last night. That's not his fault. I thought that, if we're honest, Hurts looked like a guy that's coming off 2 weeks of being out with a concussion.
Yeah, I just thought that the way the optics looked, you're on the sideline, on the bench, reading a book, is like completely, regardless of what the real intent was, it's disrespecting your teammates. Because you're telling them you're not interested. And it's certainly disrespecting your opponent because you're telling you we're whooping that ass and I don't care about the game right now. That is the issue that I have outside of A.J. Brown trying to self-help him, you know, and get the self-help he needs or to calm his mental capacity down. That's fine. But that is the issue, Mike. Like, really? We're all locked into this game now. He said after the game, I was trying to read a passage to get more locked in.
Okay.
Do it at halftime.
I mean, I'm with Carl. Yes, good to see you're very well read. But I mean, you're reading a freaking book. Now, again, when the defense is on the field, there's really nothing you can do unless you're talking with your position coach or working with your OC or on the phone or upstairs. Our good buddy James Brown is now working with Underdog. James Palmer, I should say. James Palmer got a chance to look at the book up close and personal. It's beaten up. He said there's a lot of handwritten notes, a lot of highlighted passages. So it is whatever it's in there. You know, A.J. Brown is taking it to heart. So while A.J. Brown was looking for some personal growth and trying to get his head right.
And by the way, for those of you who don't think that's a big deal, tell your next time you try to connect with your wife, have her read a book. See how that goes over with you.
That was a lie.
Yeah.
So as I said, while A.J. Brown was trying to do something positive, Philadelphia fans in the stands were just doing what Philadelphia fans do. By now, the video has gone viral. Can't play it on the radio because this dude was saying things you can't say on the air with kids in the car. There were some nice-looking Packer fans, a husband and a wife. Looks like they're sitting upper level, and you've got a Philly fan just being absolutely brutal, unprovoked, uncalled for. A lot of folks, even Eagles fans, are saying, wow, man, this is pretty bad. Well, a lot of folks are saying, if it was so bad, where were the other Eagles fans as this guy was calling the woman names and basically trying to run them out of the seats? It's just relentless. A lot of folks are saying, this is one of those guys who deserves to have his season tickets taken away and never get to get back in the stadium. It's been written a million times. I've experienced it, a dozen times. Sixers, you know, Flyers games, Eagles, Phillies. They're just awful fans. Now, not all of them. But there are so many people in that city, Carl. It's just, I don't know if it's the working class thing. It's just they live for the weekends because their lives are so down that they wrap themselves around their pro teams and they wear it like a badge of honor. Well, they also acting like jerks, they wear that like a badge of honor too.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Every time somebody says, oh my God, did you see this come out of Philly? My answer is no. Why would I be? They are the standard of jerks. This is what happens at all of their sporting events. Unfortunately, you can't wear your team's jersey into one of their sporting events, Mike, and cheer loudly for your team, which is something you should be allowed to do without catching, you know, the kind of flack you're talking about. Now we're not talking about just normal smack talk.
Right.
This is above and beyond.
I mean, this is the kind of stuff that, you know, you go to jail for in England. Now, again, that's kind of crazy how that thing plays out over there. But this is a guy, imagine you're with your wife or your girlfriend or your daughter and you got somebody running his mouth. So amazing the self-restraint, unless the guy, the Packer fan, felt like, look, if I throw it out, I'm going to have six guys beating on me. But yeah, as a lot of folks are saying, when somebody's being that bad, The fans that are enabling this behavior, you're no better than the animal that was saying the things. And it's out there. I tweeted, you look at it at Mike Bell ATL, as we said, just too nasty to put on the radio.
Well, what Philadelphia fan have you ever seen stop somebody from insulting somebody else and go, come on, man, that's a little bit too much?
Never have seen it once.
It never happens.
When I went to the, it was January of 18, and I got great seats. I was down about like a 5-yard line. So you figure if these are people, you know, lifelong Eagles fans, and as soon as I come down, I got this guy running his mouth. And I turn around, I go, dude, talk to the guy next year when you see him who sold his ticket. Don't put this on me. I remember that was a game I texted Carl. We were at the same hotel where NBC was. Tirico was there, and Al Michaels was there. Our buddy Greg Hughes from NBC. Becky and I, we got our Falcons gear. Of course, it's going to be like 20 degrees. We got overcoats on. And Al Michaels basically says, go with God to us as we're getting in the Uber. Because it's Philly, man. It's what you come to expect. Hey, man, Tom Brady, he has apparently nudged the Raiders into firing the coach and now the general manager. An article in the Las Vegas Review-Journal reports that Mark Davis had no reservations about firing his coach and GM until Tom Brady nudged him to do so. Says that Brady felt a total reset was needed after a 4-13 season. First, a full campaign with Telesco and Pierce in charge. So I know there's a lot of media folks and guys are feeling that Antonio Pierce didn't get a fair shake. Some folks are saying, talk to Brady. I mean, we thought that Pierce was kind of, Carl, in an untenable situation when you lose your quarterback. Now, Minshew was kind of a stopgap, and then it's Aiden O'Connell, and by the time we played them in Vegas, it was down to Desmond Ritter. But anyway, he gets got, and now they're looking for a new GM. Telesco would come over from the L.A. Chargers, and Brady felt they had to blow up the whole thing.
So where do they go?
Like a quarterback eat a hot dog.
What? I mean, like, does Brady, is he going to influence that hire and the head coaching hire as well? Where do they go?
I would imagine that Brady's got a short list. I mean, this is why you bring – now, is this the question? When guys come in, like Warwick Dunn is a minority owner for the Falcons, and he's obviously got a tremendous experience in the NFL as a player, and we know what he does as a humanitarian, and he's a great guy. Tom Brady's got all that experience from New England, but does that business model ever export? That's my point. Bill Belichick couldn't get it to work after Brady left. Every Belichick assistant, with the exception of Saban, and that's college, has been a fail in the NFL.
Yeah, I just...
So it's not like you could take that business model unless you get the right guys and who you're plugging in.
I feel like suggestions is one thing. Like, hey, Tom, how do you feel? What do you think? Here's what I think about the organization. The owner has to have the wherewithal. Mike, we talk about this. Like, who has our owner's ear, right? Who has Mark Davis's ear? Whoever has had his ear, it hasn't worked. So I'm not going to poo-poo this yet because he's basically looking for somebody else to give him input to say, hey, you are moving in the right direction, you're doing the right things, and here's how we do it. Mm. But I also don't think that you just take whatever Tom says and you run with it to your point because, guys, he's a great football player. It doesn't mean he knows how to build teams. Right. It doesn't mean that he knows how to hire general managers or the right head coaches. That is not on the resume. What's on the resume is 7-time Super Bowl champion as a quarterback in the NFL. If you're telling me he knows what a winning organization looks like, I would agree, Mike, but he didn't build that.
According to our buddy Hondo, who joined us from Vegas, to talk about that game we previewed with him back a couple weeks back, they're looking at Ben Johnson. Ben Johnson from the offensive coordinator for the Lions will be their number one target as head coach. But again, you know, that's, you're talking about a dysfunctional organization, an owner who's kind of got a track record of going through coaches like Sox.
Well, doesn't everybody want Ben Johnson? Well, except the Patriots. I mean, doesn't everybody want Ben Johnson? I keep hearing the Bears want him. Jags are into, like, everybody keeps talking about Ben Johnson. If he's picking his job, Mike, are you picking the Raiders?
Yeah, that's Brady's guy, apparently. That's apparently the dude that he's interested in, and that would make sense. Now, but again, you've got to go find yourself a quarterback. Now, this is going to be a very intriguing draft because either everything you read, now again, it's early days yet, we're still not even done with a regular season, but Carl, everything I've read, there's pro scouts either love Shedeur Sanders or they don't.
Yeah.
And there's other guys who feel that Cam Ward is the guy, but there's other teams before the Raiders pick. So the Raiders don't get that first dibs. You've got some transformative players on defense over there, but the quarterback is the key. That's where it all starts. We all know that. Hey, man, time for one more story. On Friday, we got to work from home. Had a blast. I don't know about you, man, but it was a lot of comfort food. I want to give a shout-out to the wife. She did an unbelievable gumbo for me on Friday, stick to your ribs, New Orleans style, kind of spicy. Yesterday, we did our own version of, like, Culver's Burgers, like butter burgers. We have, like, that, you know, the grill with the, you know, put outside, but it looks like a, you know, like the flat grill.
What's the griddle?
The griddle. So we got that cooking. That was great. And then over the weekend, I know on Friday, it was funny, one guy hit us up on the text line. You guys sound like you're having fun. Yeah, it was, I wouldn't want to go back to working from home, but it was kind of fun on Friday, especially when you throw the snow element in. And I know you got a new puppy. My dog was going bananas in the snow.
Yeah.
One thing I learned over the weekend, Ike has got a mean on for snowmen.
Really?
Yes. Ike apparently loves to bark at snowmen in the neighborhood. And then every time I take him for a walk, he would start peeing on snowmen. Now, the problem is, you got all the kids who built the snowmen. You can't have a snowman with a giant yellow spot. So I would literally be in the front yard trying to find some fresh snow to spackle. where I could pee on the snowman.
Wow.
So that was basically, that was my Saturday and Friday for the most part.
The cool thing about the snow was you didn't have to worry about whether the puppy was peeing. I will say that. Because you could, did you pee? Oh, he went. Look, it's that's yellow. We're good. We're good. Right. There were no concerns about that. But no, man, I did. I enjoyed it. He was a little bit, Frankie was fine. But Louie was like, I don't know what this is and I don't like it. But I'm glad I had a good time. Frankie was running around like a madman. Like I told you this on the air. You would have thought he was Alaskan Husky the way he was out there. I mean, he's just having a ball. So a lot of folks were posting their pictures of pets.
Right.
And it seemed like all the pets were like, yeah, party. Every video I watched, every picture I saw, it seemed like the pets were more excited than we were.